This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, we're going to talk about the bridge collapse. We're going to talk about the abortion arguments in front of the Supreme Court today. We're going to talk about language, medicine. There is so much tonight on I'm Right.
Stock Pod, Battalion 6, and Communications on Fort Armistead. Be advised, the entire bridge, the entire key bridge in the harbor. I advise to hold all traffic from committing to the bridge. I advise again, the entire key bridge has fallen into the harbor.
Okay, let's talk. We are dealing with a tragedy here, for sure. And I know you probably have many questions. We're going to get to a lot of technical stuff when it comes to shipping. How could this happen? What does this mean for the country? What's it mean for Baltimore? What we have an expert coming on. Oliver Lane's going to join us here in just a couple minutes. I just want to address a couple things right off the bat. I understand there are many, many, many suspicions out there right now. There are many theories out there right now about how and why something like this can happen. And you've seen this all day long. Maybe you've partaken in this all day long. It was this. It was terrorism. It was a cyber attack. The CIA did it. Russia. You've seen all these things today. Maybe you believe some of those things. And I'm here to tell you this. I understand. Meaning, I understand why you believe whatever it is you believe about this, whether you believe it's a total accident, that is what I believe, full disclosure, bad things do happen. If you believe Russia did this, I understand. If you believe the CIA did it, I understand. And allow me to explain why I understand. We've been warning for a long, long time on this show. This is not something we're coming up with today. Anyone who's watched this for any length of time will know what I'm saying is true. We've been warning about trust and a nation, its institutions, and their institutions, their relationship with the people of the nation. You see, a nation has people, it's you, it's me, and a nation, all nations, large and small, they have institutions. You have medical institutions, you have national security institutions, education institutions, media institutions, you have institutions, and a nation's institutions really will, they will really decide the direction of the country. If you have wonderful, good institutions, that is going to mean good things for your country. The institutions will produce better people, better outcomes, better inventions, better creations, and your country will be good. If you have a country of rotted, corrupt institutions, your country will be bad eventually. We have rotted institutions now. They've been all taken over by very, very evil people. This is stuff we talk about all the time. And what the problem that creates for us, for you, for me, is we don't trust them anymore. All the people who told you the laptop was Russian disinformation. All the people who told you the vaccine was safe and effective. Right? Look, we could go down the list of 50 years. I mean, how many years of lies? But the lies have gotten so much worse recently that now here's where we sit as Americans. We sit in a country where we don't have an official institution that has any credibility left for us. I don't know about you, that's what it's like for me. When I see, it doesn't matter who it is now, whether it's the FBI putting out an official statement. My first thought is, probably lying. It could be the CDC putting out an official statement, probably lying. Pick your institution. They've all lied to you over and over and over again. And so that brings you to where we are today. We have this horrible tragedy. We all wake up to the same news. Happened in the middle of the night. Everyone's on their phones first thing in the morning. Oh, my gosh, did you see the bridge? The bridge came down. What? And now, because there are no more institutions left you can trust, now theories, I'm not even going to call them conspiracy theories, that's too insulting. Now, theories will abound. And these theories will pick up steam all over the place because there is no institution that has enough credibility to take you or take me and ground us. No, Jesse, it wasn't a secret plot where ISIS coordinated with the CIA to bring down the Francis Scott Key Bridge so Joe Biden could win the election, you know, something crazy like that. What if that was a theory I had? That's not my theory, but what if that was a theory I had? Okay, who's going to refute it? Who do you trust to refute a crackpot theory like that? Nobody. If your official institutions have been rotted and corrupted, then the people themselves will just blow with the wind. And we're seeing today, you're seeing it all over the place. That's why it matters. And look, today, let's be honest, and I'm not dismissive. People have died. This does matter. It is a tragedy. It's a tragedy economically. It's a tragedy for the loss of life, but it's still a bridge collapse. Wasn't a building coming down with people in it. Wasn't a plane dropping out of the sky. Today's tragedy, while a very big deal, is not as bad as it could be, and as bad as maybe the next one will be. And when that next one gets here, because the institutions have violated your trust, have violated my trust, it leaves us in a really bad spot. Well, there are a lot of people out there today pretending to be shipping experts and bridge experts and things like that, but I'm not one. So I figured we should probably talk to someone who actually knows what he's talking about. Oliver Lane, Breitbart News, London editor. Okay, Oliver, you were actually awake, which is weird. I guess it's probably because you're not in the United States of America. You were awake when all this was going on. What happened? What did you see? The floor is yours. Take us to it.
Well, it was a pretty lively morning this morning. Obviously, I have the time zone advantage over you guys, but it was about 1:30 Eastern this morning where we saw the ship, the MV Derby, which collided with the Bridge of Baltimore. Now, the exact link of events that brought us to this point is pretty remarkable. It's very unusual. You have this very large ship, which was leaving the port of Baltimore about an hour after it left the side. It lost power for very briefly, about 4 minutes before the collision took place. This is perfectly evident if you look at the video footage that we fortunately have, and I can see you've got it on screen now. This is from the live 24-hour webcam that they have at the mouth of the harbour. And just 4 minutes before the ship strikes the bridge, there we go, power loss one. All the deck lights go out, and this is a very clear indication to us that they've had a total loss of power on board. This is something that should never happen. The crew are able to get the power back on in a limited sense, I believe, within approximately 1 minute. You see not all of the lights are back on, and at this point, and again you can see this on your screen right now, a large plume of smoke, black smoke, rising from the ship. At this time, the ship is clearly turning. If you think about the way that this footage has progressed, this is a stationary web camera, so we can see the way the ship is changing in relation to the viewer. At the very beginning, you have the ship which is slab side on. You can see the side of the craft. At the time of collapse, which we've just seen, the ship is basically head on. So you can see it is engaging in a starboard turn. Now, obviously, this shouldn't be happening. That is a deviation from its intended course, and that is what causes the collision with the bridge itself. But this is happening after the loss of power, and of course during the restoration, and while you have this smoke rising from the chimney. Now, early reports this morning from several news outlets, I believe erroneously, suggested that the ship had actually set on fire in the moments before it hit the bridge. Looking at this this footage, I think it is pretty clear that's not what happened. That large plume of smoke leaving the ship is actually its very large diesel engine being put into full speed. And I imagine that would be full speed astern, trying to claw back some of that speed as it races towards the bridge, and they can tell that there's a collision imminent. We've heard from the governor of Maryland that the ship was going at 8 knots at this time. Now, that's actually very fast for inside a harbor area like this, but yeah, that's something to look in at another time. But it's the vast energy imparted by a ship of that size Its maximum theoretical weight when loaded is something like 110,000 tons. And even traveling at 8 knots, say 9 miles an hour, which it is approximately, 110,000 tons traveling at that speed, the theoretical energy that imparts is so enormous that realistically no bridge on Earth, I believe, could withstand that sort of impact.
Okay, there's so much I want to get to with you. Sorry, Oliver, for the really stupid questions I'm about to ask, but I'm going to ask them because I'm stupid. You said the power loss should never happen. That was one of the first questions I had. Everyone could watch the lights go out, and everyone can see that there's a power loss. But even my son, my youngest son, on the way to school today, he asked me, Dad, how's there not a backup? So what, just the lights go out? Just like we're at the house, there's a power outage during a storm, and now I can't control the 100,000-ton ship? How could something like that happen? There aren't backups?
Well, there are backups, and this is where I say these sorts of things should never happen. But clearly this is a cascade failure. It's what people who do disaster preparedness call Swiss cheese theory. And this is a really weird way of visualizing things, so I hope you'll forgive me for explaining it, but it actually makes sense. If you imagine a slice of Swiss cheese, that, you know, beautiful yellow holy cheese you can see through, stereotypical cheese, if you hold that in front of a sheet of paper, you can see the white of the paper through. If you put another slice of Swiss cheese, which also has randomly placed circles, holes on it, on top of that first slice, then you'll be able to see a little bit of paper through where two holes overlap. Put a third slice of Swiss cheese on top, you can't see the paper at all. Again, I know it sounds weird, but this is a great way to visualize risk. Because if you just have one system in place, that risk shines through. Bad things will happen. If you have two redundant systems in place, maybe you'll be okay. You can only see a little bit of risk. And every time you add another layer, you get safer and safer. And that's a great way of visualizing cascade failures. So because one system failed, the primary engine, and clearly other things were not operating as they should have been, or there was not enough time to bring them to bear, or there was not enough space to bring them to bear, the catastrophe happened. So that's what we're looking at today. So one of these ships, they have a single prop, that's a single propeller at the back, that is powered by a single engine. But yes, there are backups. In many cases of a ship this size, several backup systems. But it looks to me, and I'm looking at the notes I have here, so forgive me from looking off camera, we're looking at power out at 0525 and 20 seconds. This is UTC time, so that's 0125 Eastern. And that is all of 4 minutes and 20 seconds before the collision. This is such an incredibly small amount of time in which they've got to attempt all of their initial startup systems, try and get the engine back on. And I think we could see that happening with that plume of smoke. And if that fails, and they've got to get down to the machinery space, the tiller flat, to try and get manual control over the rudder, the amount of time involved at this time in the morning, it's so small. Now, thinking about this very small amount of time involved, I think a really, really interesting thing to look at is what we heard from the mayor and the governor and the chief of police this afternoon from Baltimore, which is that it was actually possible for the ship to make a distress call, a mayday call to shore, and for the city government to close the bridge. So if you look at this footage, the live footage we were looking at earlier on, when it was nighttime, you can see the ship approaching and then the bridge comes down. If you go back, you know, 5-10 minutes, you can see there's a lot of traffic. In fact, you can see it right now. You can see there's a lot of traffic crossing the bridge, 18-wheelers, private cars. Okay, it's 1 a.m. in the morning. It's not heavy traffic, but you can see the vehicles going. But as the ship gets closer and closer, suddenly there's no more traffic crossing. The city had time to change the lights or put up the bridge close signs. And what does that involve? That involves the men on the bridge, the men on the bridge of the ship, the men in control of that cargo ship, realizing they have a problem, realizing they're going to hit the bridge, radioing ashore. So the person inside the office at the Harbour Authority being next to the radio, he then receives the message and gets in contact with the city authorities to close the bridge. And by my reckoning, looking at approximately how long they had to do that, I think we're looking at 1.5 minutes to 2 minutes to close the bridge. It was that close, and that is incredible.
Yeah. Okay, we could probably nerd out on details of this till the end of time, but I have a lot more I need to get to with you. The Port of Baltimore, people do not understand, most people, normal people do not understand shipping, how it affects a nation's economy, how big some ports are. Many are a lot bigger than others, right? There are big ones and really important ones, and there are small ones that aren't as important. What is the Port of Baltimore?
So the Port of Baltimore is one of the United States' largest ports in the Northeast. It's certainly not one of the largest in the country, but the degree to which that actually matters is not enormous. And let me tell you why. The Port of Baltimore, I think, is the 17th largest port in the US. But in terms of specialist trading, it is the largest. For instance, we learn from the city of Baltimore in a press release released just last month, February, that last year, the Port of Baltimore handled more traffic of car deliveries. So this is new imported automobiles from Europe, the Far East, China, South Korea, etc. They received more of these imported cars last year than any other port in the United States. And not only was it that the case last year, they have achieved this feat of being the single major point of embarkation, debarkation, I should say, every year for the past 13 years. So it's not like all of the other ports in the United States have a huge amount of spare capacity and they can just absorb all these imports that will be going through Baltimore. That's not the case at all. Things are run on very, very tight margins. And that's always been the case in shipping. That's not unusual. And that's just one kind of import, cars and trucks. There's also agricultural machinery. There's also the container trade, which this ship was carrying. You know, that had 9,000 containers on board. I believe Baltimore dealt with over 1 million containers last year. I think it dealt with merchandise worth over $80 billion. So think about the potential economic impacts of losing a single port to this enormous degree. So it may be closed for weeks or months, depending on how seriously your government takes this. Because, okay, if we get specialist engineers in, this could be a job of months. If you look at the Costa Concordia, which was a very large ship that was lost in the Mediterranean, that actually took, I think, almost a year to recover, if I remember correctly. Then again, the federal government may get involved. Of course, there will be costs involved in this. That will add on to your borrowing and therefore your inflation. But you get the Navy in. You could get specialist engineers in, you get divers in, and perhaps this could be cleared faster. In any case, the port's going to be closed for a while. All this is going to back up the international trade system. This is going to add to costs. This is going to create delays in your economy. This is all inflationary. And that's a very important point to take away.
Yeah, that sure is. Okay, the bridge itself, bridges matter, especially bridges over a mile long. This is a major bridge. What effect does that have?
Well, obviously, you have this bridge which carries four lanes of traffic. It doesn't carry a railway, which I believe President Biden might have suggested earlier on today. Don't quote me on that. the fact is, it's one of several bridges over the river outside Baltimore, but it's the one that avoids town. And this is, bear in mind, this is the road corridor that'll take you between Washington, D.C. and New York. This isn't somewhere that's out of the way. This is a major thoroughfare on the northeast coast of your country. So you lost this road. Yes, there are other bridges further inland, but you're pushing the traffic inland. And that means enormous congestion in Baltimore, or you're diverting around the city, which means enormous delays to the deliveries. And think what this means to the delivery schedules of freight, of 18-wheelers, tractor trailers. And this, again, it's all adding into the inflationary aspect of this loss.
Oliver, I cannot thank you enough. That was wildly informative. I appreciate you. That's not good, is it? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but he's right. Supreme Court had an argument today, oral arguments at the Supreme Court about the abortion pill. We're going to talk to Abby Johnson about that next. Before we get to Abby, let's get to this. Let's get to protection. I know you saw the news out of Michigan today. 25-year-old girl carjacked, killed by an illegal. We are importing not just criminals, entire criminal networks are coming into this country from overseas. The streets are more dangerous now and will be for the foreseeable future than we've ever had. When you leave the home, what do you carry on you that will stop a bad man from hurting you? Get a Byrna pistol launcher. Even if you're not a gun person, I am. I carry concealed, but this is non-lethal. I love having a non-lethal option. So even if you hate guns, Byrna pistol launchers, they're legal in all 50 states. No background checks. You don't need a permit for it. Shoots these pepper balls or tear gas balls. These things stop bad people. SWAT teams across America use these things, and they're available for us. Get a Byrna pistol launcher and make sure you get to come home every night, all right? Go to Byrna.com/Jesse. Save yourself a pile of money. Go get one for someone you love and yourself. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I gather your injury is that you think you're going to sell more if the restrictions that previously were in place were lifted.
Yes.
So you're going to make more money.
The injury is that we are prevented from selling our product in line with FDA's scientific judgment about the safe and efficacious use of the drug.
And you're going to be harmed because you're going to sell more.
I think that certainly a company's ability to market its product is a part of how it considers the regulatory scheme that governs its conduct.
Do you think the FDA is infallible?
No, Your Honor. We don't think that at all. And we don't think that question is really teed up in any way in this case.
Has the FDA ever approved a drug and then pulled it after experience showed that it had a lot of really serious adverse consequences?
It has certainly done that. There is no drug on the market today under any REMS that requires the kind of reporting that the plaintiffs are saying should be reimposed here.
So why would that be a bad thing? Wouldn't your company, you don't want to sell a product that causes very serious harm to the people who take your product, relying on your tests and the FDA's tests. Wouldn't you want that data?
Your Honor, that data is certainly something that we are looking for all the time.
Alito pulling no punches out there today. Joining me now, Dr. Abby Johnson, former Planned Parenthood director, now one of the great pro-life advocates in this country. Okay, Abby, talk to us about the Supreme Court hearing today. What the heck was this thing about? Alito obviously going scorched earth. How do we feel about all this stuff? Give us the breakdown.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Jessica Ellsworth, Danco's attorney, sounding a little shaky there, a little nervous. Yeah. I'm not sure they were ready for Justice Alito's out-of-the-gate comments and questions like that. So that's good. You know, mifepristone, which is the drug that's really on trial right now at the Supreme Court, we know that medication abortion is more dangerous than surgical abortion. And people are like, what? That doesn't make any sense, right? Certainly, surgery would be more dangerous than taking pills. But in this case, it's actually not. We know that medication abortion is 4 times more dangerous than surgical abortion. And why is that? Well, it's because with medication abortion, about 20% of women who take these drugs will have severe complications. And generally, the severe complications mean that parts of their baby are going to be left in their uterus, that the pills did not do an effective enough job to empty and evacuate their entire baby from their uterus. So then what happens? Well, these women have been through such a traumatic event with this abortion, right? They've been bleeding for weeks. They've been passing clots the size of lemons. They've had labor-like contractions, sometimes for days and days. They don't want to go back to the doctor, right? They're like, I'm done. I don't want to go back anymore. So they don't go back, but they still have parts of their baby in their uterus and they don't know that. And so that causes a very serious infection, and that infection turns into sepsis, and sepsis is fatal. And so when you look at all of the deaths surrounding abortion, almost all of them in the past 20 years, almost all, not all, almost all of them have been because of medication abortion. And almost all of them have been because the woman did not fully pass her baby out of her womb.
Abby, can you tell us, how does a woman get these things? Can I walk into Walgreens today and buy a pack? Not that I'm interested in doing so. How does a woman, no matter where she is, whether she's in Texas or Massachusetts, how does she get her hands on this kind of deadly medication?
So it's super easy, Jesse. I could go online to over 70 websites right now. I could put in fake information. I could put in real information. I could put in a fake date of birth. I could put in a real date of birth. I could put in my home address. I could put in somebody else's address. And in over these 70 websites, they will send me the medication abortion pills to anywhere I request. And it's about between $100 and $150, depending on what site you go to. I will never have a consult with a doctor or a nurse. I will never talk to anybody about my medical history. They don't even ask really about your medical history. I could be a 12-year-old yeah. girl that is faking my date of birth and is being abused by my soccer coach. I could be someone who is involved in a sex trafficking ring and is going to slip these drugs into one of my victim's drinks. It could be anybody. Jesse, it could be anybody, and you can obtain these pills online.
Okay, so what are they arguing today, Abby? This stuff gets so confusing. What specifically is the Supreme Court going to decide on, and which way do we think they're going to go?
So basically what they're arguing today is that the FDA was irresponsible with delivering and allowing these mifepristone pills to be used for public consumption. And really they were. The FDA fast-tracked these pills to be sent out to the public. And I mean, there were not appropriate trials used. The data was bad. And the data that we had showed that this was not good for women. And they put it out there anyway. And so that's really what we're looking at today in the Supreme Court. And Danko is having to back up their poor clinical trials. They're having to back up the fact that women are dying from this pill that they are giving to women, that they're distributing to women. And, you know, there are many amicus briefs that have been filed. I'm on one of those briefs who I've had a medication abortion and was very much traumatized by that abortion. As well as many other women. And so there are hundreds of women that have filed amicus briefs in the Supreme Court, you know, on behalf of this case, saying medication abortion is not safe, and it should not be allowed to be distributed to the public.
Thank you for what you do, Abby. Please keep going. Keep saving lives out there. All right. We are going to talk about language, speaking of abortion. We'll talk a little bit about that and just the language we use to describe everything and language we shouldn't use. Before we get to that, let's talk about this. Let's talk about money. They're attacking our money. It's wild to think about, isn't it, that the people who run our monetary system, they're destroying the dollar. You know that they're not done printing money? Do you realize that? They're still just printing money. We're sitting there, we can't afford gas, you can't afford eggs, you're watching the value of your dollar disappear, and they're not stopping. They're not slowing down. Call Oxford Gold Group and start taking steps to protect yourself. Oxford Gold Group will get precious metals, gold or silver coins, I don't care which kind, they'll get it in your physical possession. You have to have something these people can't destroy the value of. That's precious metals. If I put you in a time machine and sent you 1,000 years back into the past, with your gold, you'd have value. It'll be the same 1,000 years in the future. 833-995-GOLD. 833-995-GOLD. Call Oxford Gold Group. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, really quickly, let's talk about language. Like we were just talking about abortion and what do they call it? Reproductive rights, right? Women's health care. But why do they call it that? Well, they understand, the communist understands that language matters. They understand if you're going to carve up a baby like a Thanksgiving turkey, you better find some kind of benign way to describe that. So now it's women's health and things like that. Language matters to the communist, so it should matter to you. Meaning, you should never, ever, 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 ever use the language the communist is using because his language is designed specifically to deceive. So if you use his language, you're participating in the lies he tells. I want you to watch something. It's very fascinating. Tim Kaine is a United States senator. The invasion of our border is an invasion. Millions and millions in 3 years. My goodness, actually, you could argue it's one of the biggest invasions, largest invasions in human history of any kind. But he adamantly refuses to use that word.
I don't think it's an invasion. It is an immigration crisis. It's a national security issue. But I think you got to be careful throwing around words like invasion. It was that kind of wording that led the deranged guy to go shoot up the Tree of Life synagogue in Pittsburgh, killing folks a couple years ago. And I think that kind of rhetoric is irresponsible.
Yeah. The people who've been calling you a Nazi white supremacist for the last 10 years, they're worried about your irresponsible language. What if it causes someone to do something bad? But the reason I love that clip so much is it really brings home what we talk about all the time. The communist, communism itself, it relies on two things. The murder of its political opponents, that's why they've killed so many people, and lies. Those are the fuel that drive communism. They must kill the people who are in the way, and they must lie about everything at all times. The modern American Democrat is a communist, and he's lying about everything at all times, and he does it purposefully. So never, ever, ever use his language. All right? All right. You know who else lies? Timeshare companies lie. That's who lies, these timeshare companies. They tell you, oh, no, no, come enjoy the timeshare. Look at the palm trees. Enjoy the beach. Have a pina colada. But what they never seem to mention in that little seminar is that you're not allowed out. Once you get in, they hold you there like you're some kind of prisoner. You're not stuck in your timeshare, though, thanks to Lone Star Transfer. They will legally and permanently get you out. They put it in writing. They give you a time frame. How successful are they? 99% of the time, they legally and permanently set you free. Go call Lone Star Transfer. Stop paying the annual fees. Stop paying the special assessments. Make a phone call. 844-310-2646. Let Lone Star Transfer set you free. All right? We'll be back.
Remember, during the pandemic, Donald Trump told us to inject ourselves with bleach. He said there's nothing to worry about if you do that. Now Trump keeps telling us he's going to terminate the ACA. Think about what that means.
The lies. It's one of the things that I will never, ever forget about COVID is how our institutions, all of them, it was way more than just politicians, lied to us at the federal level. CDC, FDA, all of them, just lies. Joining me now, a man who was an actual leader during COVID when leaders were real, real hard to come by. State Surgeon General of the state of Florida, Dr. Joseph A. DeLotipo. Doctor, I remember it like it was yesterday, how disheartening it was to watch the institutions I should be able to trust lie to me over and over and over again, and none of them have apologized at all.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. That was a nice clip you showed. It turns out Donald Trump was maybe right. Might have been safer to inject the little bleaks in the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines they forced on people. But yeah, absolutely. It's been an unfortunate time. And even though the acute period has passed, we're still in a time where the motivations of those people leveraging those strategies are unchanged. And, you know, I hope that more and more people realize that. I think a lot of people do. I mean, it's just waiting behind the scenes to pounce again the next time there's an opportunity to exert some authoritarianism and, you know, subjugate people's rights.
Can you speak to the motivations? Because that's one of the things that hit me. It's not that I needed any help being cynical about government before, but it was doctors, right? Doctors and the people in the white lab coat. People, you can trust a doctor, right? He's never going to steer you wrong. It was like the Center for Disease Control. That was never a political thing like 15 minutes ago. And these organizations, it's almost as if they turned against us. Why?
Yeah, it's complex. And I myself don't fully understand it, but there are a number of different forces at play in a really unfortunate and sinister synchronism, if you will. With the doctors, you're right. I mean, doctors in general, very trustworthy people, except when they're under a spell. In this case, we're talking vaccine worship versus just treating it like any other medication whose purpose is to actually help human beings. You know, you think the doctors are serving the industry and this ideology, and that's correct. That literally comes before patients' preferences, which that doesn't happen for anything else. It's literally just vaccines where patient preferences come second and this vaccine ideology comes first. I mean, you know, there's that. There's pharmaceutical companies and their pursuit of profit and their, you know, skillful way of working their way into both the minds of doctors and, you know, government officials that are regulating. I mean, there's definitely the people who saw this as an opportunity to exert more power and take away more power from human beings. So I think a lot of forces were at play at the same time. And you know, and I only know a few of them.
Doctor, you mentioned the mRNA vaccine, if we're still even going to call that ridiculous thing that. Here's a little montage of some doctors.
The thing that went right was the investment over decades in the basic and clinical biomedical research that allowed us to make a vaccine in unprecedented time of less than a year that turned out to be safe and highly effective.
They are safe and so effective.
We know that vaccines are safe and effective.
The data is so compelling that these vaccines are safe and effective.
I have really good news. Today, our nation has achieved a medical miracle. We have delivered a safe and effective vaccine in just 9 months. This is one of the greatest scientific accomplishments in history.
Doctor, are they safe and effective?
Well, you know, that was a great montage there. And, you know, I'll have to certainly these vaccines were developed during the Trump administration, unfortunately, including the lockdowns. But I'll give them a pass because the other people in that montage actually had the training to reflect on our history with medications, which is that you never know everything that you need to know when they first come out, and to read the data. I mean, I love where you had Dr. Wen, I think her name is, saying they're really, really effective. So these vaccines are, I think early on in the pandemic, there was pretty good evidence that they prevented people from getting ill, seriously ill from COVID-19. Wasn't great evidence, but it was pretty good. At this point, that's completely out the window. There's no evidence whatsoever. And in fact, what you have now are multiple studies CDC never acknowledges this. Multiple studies now that show that people who receive these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, the boosters, have an increased risk of contracting COVID-19. Multiple studies show this. I mean, you know, different countries, different populations of people, it clearly is a phenomenon. It may be related to something called immune imprinting that's been also shown as sort of an IgG class switch, the technical language that's also been shown, but they're terrible products. And the safety, you know, you could write a book about the number of lives that they've either ended or they've hurt and damaged irreparably. Irreparably, because of the fact that they're just completely unsafe products. And by the way, we're just going to keep getting more bad news.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Okay, why would they develop something that was so unsafe? Those of us, many of us don't understand, myself very much included, how this process works. Even if you're a pharmaceutical company and you want to make money, obviously you want to sell a bunch of these things, but it doesn't pay money if the people you give them to die. Even drug dealers know that, although I guess in a way we're dealing with things like that. Why aren't these things safer? Everyone told us they were safe. Why aren't they safer? What got screwed up?
No, that's a great question. I mean, I'll share the part that I think is correct and true, but you know, there are definitely aspects of this that I don't understand. A major force is the pharmaceutical industry and how adept they are at, you know, contorting laws, contorting lawmakers, contorting organizations to serve their bidding for the purpose of maximizing their profit. And you're right, you know, like even drug dealers know if you kill your customers, but in this case, it doesn't matter if you own the store manager, right? Like the customers may be getting injured, and they certainly are. And you can see it, like no one's taking these boosters anymore. And you know, you look at these surveys that Rasmussen does and you see among both, by the way, Democrats and Republicans, I mean, fairly similar rates, pretty high, of people who either believe that the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines have killed people that they know or believe that they've injured people. Very high rates. And it's very similar across Democrats and Republicans. So, but unfortunately, right, you've got the FDA, the, you know, the other members of the federal government who are just totally in bed with these pharmaceutical companies and their agendas, and certainly leaders of mostly the Democratic Party, but you also have that in the Republican Party too. So that's a piece of how they're still getting away literally with murder and worse. But you know, there are other parts of it too.
Doctor, how concerned are you about the future of medicine in this country?
I'm both concerned and hopeful. I mean, I'm concerned because unfortunately, so much of medicine has lost its integrity. You know, you saw how, I mean, you know, stories of good doctors, you know, who've taken care of their patients, getting taken down by medical boards for just having a different opinion or thinking that, you know, feeling that they wanted to treat their patients with hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, which they absolutely have a right to do. I mean, people get to exercise clinical judgment and then saying negative things about the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines and getting, you know, blackballed by medical boards. So that makes me obviously very sad. And it's just a terrible testament of where we are. But at the same time, I'm hopeful, you know, Jesse, I'm hopeful because I really do see a good future. I mean, you have more of these things, a lot of these things that we've seen during the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, the capture of federal organizations, the capture of lawmakers, the capture of federal leadership, you know, the adultery, if you will, of physicians to the shrine of vaccines. I mean, a lot of that, this stuff has been happening, just it's mostly been happening in the background. And now it's coming into the foreground and everyone's getting to see it. And every day, more and more people wake up and just see that our system in terms of health and in other areas too, is completely, totally, absolutely, irreparably corrupt. And that consciousness, that awakening is the gateway, is the doorway, is the path to a better future. So, you know, both saddened, but also hopeful.
Well, we'll hang on to that hope. Doctor, I appreciate you very much. Thank you, sir. All right. We have light in the mood. Somebody's birthday. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right. Let's lighten the mood. And did you know that today is Nancy Pelosi's 84th birthday? I know. Maybe you're sitting there saying to yourself, I don't like Nancy Pelosi. Or maybe you're saying to yourself, wow, our government is really old. Why is she still there? She's 84. Why don't you just retire? No, those things would be legitimate to say, but I have to tell you, we put together a little greatest hits compilation of Grandma Vodka, and I tell you what, hater or not, I wish we had some of her on our team.
Most of your constituents block the sergeant. Stop the genocide. Stop the Holocaust.
President Kamala Harris, the best running mate for this president?
He thinks so, and that's what matters. And by the way,
you think so?
She's very politically astute.
Do you think she is the best running mate, though?
She's the vice president of the United States. So people say to me, well, why isn't she doing this or that? I said, because she's the vice president. That's the job description. You don't do that much.
Will you commit to serving your full 2-year term for the people of San Francisco?
What is this? What is this? Don't bother me with a question like that. Really? Really? Okay? Is that what I'm going to do? Yeah. I don't, those kind of questions are such a waste of my time. No, I'm a, yes, sir.
I love her. Don't bother me with this. Republicans would have been all, well, I mean, I guess if you really want me to. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.